Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 40 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. And I also want to welcome my regular co-host. I have Randy Johnston from K2 Enterprises on the line with me. Welcome, Randy.
Good day, Darren, and good day to all our listeners.
And I also have Dave McClure. Dave is the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. But, Dave, I think last time you told me that might be changing, right?
Well, I'm in a kind of funny transition area. Of course, I love the association. I'll always continue to work for them. But right now I'm working with my home county. We have just won a $2 million grant to build a fiber optic network through the county, and I'm going to help with that and hopefully straightening out a few other IT kinds of things. So could well be it'll end up in a permanent position. We'll just have to wait and see.
Good. Well, guys, today I have a couple of topics for us I'd like to tackle. First, as both of you know, I believe it was on Saturday that Apple launched the iPad, so it's officially out there. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that, and then I'd like for us to pivot and talk about, we talk a lot about wireless security, but I want to talk a little bit today about document security in our listeners' offices and how that how they should be thinking about that maybe different than they are today. So let's start out. Let's just tackle the iPad. Randy, why don't you kick us off?
Well, in fact, the iPad did ship, and they actually had pretty good supply around the country. At my closest supply point, which was the local Best Buy in Wichita, they had 80 and sold them out in 6 hours, roughly. So, you know, a number of people have them in their possession, and from our team, Dr. Bob has, in fact, purchased an iPad. So now the trial periods begin to say, how can we use this for business purposes, or is this really a personal device?
Dave, you got a thought on that?
I'm going to jump right in here and say, okay, I love the look of the thing. I truly do. I went over and I played with one before they were sold out. I vacillated back and forth. Should I buy one? Should I not? And what it came down to for me is I don't have a business need for it. It's awfully nice, but what I have a business need for is probably more a netbook than the iPad.
You know, I carry a MacBook Pro, and I'm very happy with that and do a lot of presentations with it. But I certainly like toys. So I don't know if I'm going to quantify it quite yet as a need for me, but it certainly is a want. The way I'm thinking about using it, though, is as a tool to present maybe some nice graphics. You know, we do some website developing, and we do a lot of browsing and showing different websites on the web. So I think I'm going to use it for that. I think it's kind of a novelty, a cool tool, and I think it should display things really nicely. What do you guys think about that idea?
Well, you know, that's actually right now my thinking on it, although, you know, Darren, I know that in our discussions you've kind of convinced me it may have merit as a presentation tool, and it certainly is capable of doing email, so some of those type of functions make good sense. As I was analyzing how I might use it, the toy versus tool purchase for me personally, I really still had kept it pretty much in the toy category. Good for home, and as our listeners have heard us discuss before, I'm actually running a number of different video streaming things around my home, primarily from an iTouch today. So when I manipulate my video libraries, if you will, with Boxy, I can do that all with an iTouch. Well, the ability to interface that device as my TV stereo console, if you will, surround sound console, plus the ability to do some reading on it, like we've talked about our Kindles before, seems to me that could be a real fine front room device for our home. But, you know, in terms of the other business purposes and so forth, does it have enough capability for the weight, price versus a Kindle if you're primarily focusing on reading? Maybe, maybe not. If you're looking at it for a netbook replacement, unless more applications arrive, probably not at this point. So, you know the press reviewers early, of course, were thinking this was like a super iPod or a super iPhone. Those are probably pretty good positions with a larger screen. And let's face it, for many of us, having the bigger screen can make all the difference in usability. For me personally, some netbook screens are small enough that I debate if the 9, 10, or 12-inch screens are sufficient for day-to-day work compared to a, you know, 15 or a 17-inch laptop.
I'm wondering if it's going to be able to replace my Kindle. I mentioned earlier, guys, that, you know, I sat out. It was beautiful in southern Indiana yesterday, and I sat outside and read on my Kindle, and it was pure sunny, and I have no problems reading on my Kindle. So I'm hoping, you know, that this device potentially replaces that for me, but don't know what it's going to be like in direct sunshine.
Yeah, well, I know many of our listeners have maybe been heads down, but a few maybe have slipped in a little bit of a vacation, and I actually got a little ski time in recently, and I found in the bright sun of the ski resort that I could actually pull out the Kindle from the car and, you know, waited on some of the other people to show up for a little bit. Perfectly good. But I'd had the same type of issue on my phone, seeing the display in bright light. So basically had to put the phone inside my helmet to be able to read the phone well enough to work.
But here's the problem, guys. That's all well and good, Randy, but I haven't been skiing in probably 25 years, so that's not really an issue to me. And I'm not making fun of you. It's for people in my position, we're stuck between two places. When we travel, when we are out and about, when we're scurrying to the airport or sitting on an airplane, we have a choice between using a small laptop or a netbook or using our cell phone. Trying to answer email, especially if it's something sophisticated or difficult, off of a cell phone is painful. I don't care how good your keyboard or keypad is. And sometimes, you know, the laptop is just a bit too much to carry when you're on your 17th day and you have to carry it with you everywhere. So the question is, and it really applies to the Kindle too, because I love these technologies. I'd love to own them. If I could just convince my budget manager that they were essential to business or that they would replace another device. And what I'm hearing in both cases is they're really nice to have, but if you were in a budget crunch, as many departments are this year, you're probably going to take a pass on it. Is that a fair assessment?
Randy, go ahead.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think it's a pretty fair assessment, Dave, because unfortunately I wound up on a deal pretty recently where I just didn't have access to my laptop and wound up stranded for some time, and about the only thing I could really do was email from a phone. Did I get them done? Yes. Was it painful? Yes. Was it a good use of time? Yes. But was it a whole lot worse trying to answer the emails on the phone or the BlackBerry, if you want to look at it that way, than doing it on a laptop? Boy, I would have been a lot better off on the laptop. So, however, you know, carrying that extra weight, just as you guys know, I'm headed overseas, and I very distinctly made the decision to leave my heaviest gear behind, and specifically I'm traveling with a netbook device just because I needed a little more compute power. And yes, I've got a European and Australian phone, but it wasn't going to be enough to travel by itself.
So, Randy, this is a big issue for companies that have any kind of international operations, or even for guys who go and or ladies who go on vacation outside the U.S. and need to stay connected. Will the iPad do to handle your routine email chores and basic computing chores overseas? And we've already said, since it doesn't support Office yet, I got to believe that's going to change, that you're going to have to find some other suite of software that's compatible. Will it do for that, Randy?
It will not do for that in its current release. So again, that's what makes it probable not a business solution for a lot of people. But I cannot imagine any condition under which Apple or third parties won't add enough to the platform to make it useful over the next few months.
And I agree with that.
So later this month, we're supposed to have the Wi-Fi plus 3G that comes out, which is the one that I just ordered, and that's going to come in the 16, 32, and 64 gigabit flavors. Randy, I thought there's supposed to be, a word processor platform on it in its current state. I don't know if it's Apple. Is it AppleWorks maybe?
Yeah, it's the Apple suite type of approach, which is probably sufficient for building, doing some things, and converting.
Yeah.
But it's clearly not a Microsoft Office or an Open Office replacement.
But as far as email and banging out maybe a Word document or an Excel document or something like, in Apple's version of that, in AppleWorks, it should be sufficient to do that. And those, I think you can say both of those, whether it's the Word-like document or the Excel-like document, in the Word or Excel format.
Yes, I think it is probably sufficient at that level.
Now,
so
Randy,
Go ahead, Dave.
I have a question, though, Randy, because something you said earlier before we started rolling tape on this caught my attention, and that is if we take it out of the work environment, if we take the iPad into your living room where you're doing multimedia stuff, maybe streaming to your television set through Wi-Fi, because I know mine has that capability now. Is this a good, I hate to use this term, but it's appropriate. Is this a good toy that accountants should buy post-tax season for their families for the living room?
Boy, it sure feels like it to me, and that's why, from a purchase perspective, if, in fact, the function that I'm doing with Boxy, as an example, where it becomes kind of that living room table, that in-table type of device where, traditionally we might have put a book there or whatever, I'm thinking the iPad's going to live there and it's going to become the universal remote control while also serving reading functions, while also serving, light other web functions.
Well, I guess the best thing we can do right now is stay tuned because, as we know, this is going to evolve probably quite rapidly over the next few months would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I see it coming down.
Well, guys, let's move on to our second topic and talk a little bit about paper document security. As I mentioned before, we talk a lot about wireless security, and Dave's really been hard on us about maintaining strong wireless security, and rightfully so. But, we have all these documents in our offices. All of our practitioners have documents in their offices and in their document storage systems. How should we be thinking about securing these? Randy, you want to take that?
I'll take the first cut at this. And I'm probably a tad over the top on this, but I'm trying to put us in the safest position, and then you can adjust from there. First position is that in the long haul, I think we're going to have to encrypt documents when they're at rest, when they're in storage, which means that we're going to have to run some sort of encryption methodology, whether that's Windows BitLocker or PGP. We're going to have to do that. And any time that a document's in transit, we already have some laws that restrict that in certain states. That's the example of the Massachusetts law or the Nevada law, or for that matter, the Michigan and Washington varieties, or the already through the House of Representatives variety. But the fact of the matter is, if we're storing documents at rest, not encrypted, and somebody has a security breach, we've got an issue. So first position is, I'd really like all documents encrypted all the time. The issue is the complexity of getting that done, making it easy enough for a legitimate user to get to it. And today, we don't really have very good access controls with our user IDs and passwords. Now, we can make those somewhat secure, but we don't have single, but not multi-factor authentication. And we need a 2-3-factor authentication that's easy to use and doesn't cost an arm and a leg and is integrated, and that really is just not very much in the marketplace. There's a few examples that solve it today, but not many.
Dave, are you seeing this as an issue?
Yeah, it's a big issue, and there are a couple of things that I'd note very quickly. It's very difficult to gin up any kind of useful security system for documents at rest, because the minute you do, law enforcement will be jumping down your throat demanding to know how they can hack into it because they hate the idea of documents that they can't access in a criminal case. But the minute you open that back door for law enforcement, you've opened it for hackers too, because every ex-deputy who knows how to do it can go out and peddle that knowledge. So, and I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen effective encryption. But the thing I got to tell you is I've seen study after study after study on this, and the place they get you isn't just encryption. Password encryption would work just fine if you were a little more careful about the basics. And what I'm talking about is who cleans your office. In study after study, you go through these extensive interviews to hire new people and make sure they're reliable, and then you let anybody walk into your office at night with all the keys to the building, who can walk in, fire up your computer, read everything on it, walk out and sell it. We don't even ask that night cleaning crews be bonded. We just hire, well, they're whoever the building management sends around to clean our office, so they must be okay. And in about 60%, that was the last number I saw, of incidents in which security was compromised on PCs, it's a cleaning crew guy who walks in, he looks in the desk, he looks on top of the desk, under the blotter, taped to the monitor, there are all your passwords, just fires them up and goes in because nobody knows, and they're gone 2 days later with all your data.
And unfortunately, I can't tell you how many times I've been out on consulting engagements and watched it happen. And I often take pictures of it happening to show the clients that I'm working for what's going on after business hours, including one of my favorite ones from late 2009, where they had extensive keypads and security codes and badge issuances and so forth, and the cleaning crews came in at night and propped the doors open so they could get in and out without their badges. And so then it became a pretty trivial matter to walk into the building, as I actually not only saw on the first night I was there, but on subsequent nights, and I actually had the management team watch what was going on by having them stay late.
You know, I guess this brings to mind, you know, most of our practitioner listeners, Randy, are going to probably have tax returns laying all over their desks, whether it's prior years or the ones they're working on or what have you. Those are laying out everywhere, and a lot of personal information is there. So, with cleaning crews coming, what sure starts making you think about, you know, everything needs to be digitized when it comes in and locked down a little bit more, right?
It does. Right. And in fact, this whole cleaning crew point that Dave made is actually the way I usually start a conversation like this, because it is common that we have paper out, and electronic can be more secure than paper format. And it is so common that our listeners are officed in a building that they don't own, where they've subleased space. It's so common that people hire cleaning work done because it is something they can, you know, pay for and use their time more productively. And you just start thinking about how many of us use cleaning crews, whether we own the building or lease space. It's a very common security breach. So then we can start talking about things like intelligent passwords and encryption of documents.
You know, I guess I have to wonder how does a listener even go about thinking about attacking this, guys?
Well, first of all, let's start with, at the end of each day, clean off your desk, put the papers in a desk drawer that is lockable, and lock it. At least then it's not laying there for anyone to look at. They have to work at it a little bit. And if you come in the morning and your lock has been broken, then you know you've got a security breach and you can go after it. So, I mean, some of the simplest stuff is common sense stuff, but I know, and I know Randy will agree with this, it simply isn't done. and walk around your own office and ask people where their password is kept. And if it's kept on, you know, those little slide-out trays at the side of a desk to rest things on, what are they, writing trays? They're usually there, or they're in the top center desk drawer on a business card or a piece of paper, or they're taped to the monitor. And if you find that in your own office, chastise that employee, tell them if they have to put that password in their purse or lock it somewhere at least so nobody can get to their passwords. Those two things alone, I think, would make an enormous difference.
But you guys know this is a huge mentality shift for the majority of our listeners. This would be a big shift because, I mean, it's not the way they've been used to working for a long time.
For a long time. In fact, it is almost a dysfunctional shift. It's such a huge shift, I think.
Yep.
And, even in the days where we were just trying to get people to grow their firms, and I realize a lot of our firms are smaller firms, but when firms get bigger, separating HR files out or separating out administration and then separating duties so not everyone in the firm has access to all the information. And some firms actually have a client that, you know, the information is not to be spread around, so they limit the number of people that can work on it. But most firms, anybody can see anything is more of the culture. And this is actually a problem on document security in general when we start saying, who should see this document? Because I believe that there's multiple levels of authority that need to be enacted against documents, but many firms just say, you know, if they're good enough to work for the firm, they can look at anything.
And it's a trust issue. You're right, Randy. It's a trust issue where I can hear accountants saying, look, I know these people. I've known them for years. I trust all of them. But I'll go back to what I said. You don't know the cleaning crew. You don't know the guy who hired on yesterday as a security guard and will be gone tomorrow. I mean, I'm willing to bet, and don't get this wrong, I have a tremendous relationship with my ex-wife. But if I wanted to know anything about her income tax return, 22 years ago she used the same accounting firm she uses today. I could find a cleaning crew person who wants an extra $100 to pull up her returns and hand them to me. It could be done.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if I'm a practitioner, which I am, sitting here listening, I'm thinking, geez, there's just so many things for me to do. So running my firm today is tremendously different than running my firm 25 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's almost frighteningly different, I think. But just as frightening on the other side to me is the practitioners who are running their firms the same way.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with you, Randy. So, you know, hopefully at least our listeners of this podcast will at least take note and realize that this issue could be an important issue.
Yeah. And, you know, one of my character flaws is I trust people very explicitly. I wouldn't make a very good auditor on that line because I just don't think people will do things that are, illegal and immoral and so forth. But the problem is not only do we have some risk with people that are inside our firms, it's these people on the outside, and we are now getting laws enacted that proscribe what has to be done. And as we look at that, all of a sudden we realize we're going to have to respond to that in some fashion. I think most of our listeners will assess the risk and say, if I do nothing, my risk is X. If I do this, my risk is Y, and if I do it completely and correctly, my risk is Z, and here's what the costs are. I think we're going to have some of those types of things going on, but the laws are pretty clear. You really need to have something in place, and we're going to get some technology assistance here with Windows 7 as our firms convert their older technologies to this newer technologies. We'll get some easier-to-use encryption. That'll help us, but we still will have some fundamental physical things that we'll have to worry about as well.
Darren, if I have three rules that I would urge every accounting firm to follow, these are easy rules, okay? First, set your virus scan to run a full system scan every single night. Won't harm anything. You'll be there in the office. It'll identify whether someone's trying to put a bot or a Trojan on your machine. Second, lock up client information every night before you leave. find a place, get a storage cabinet. If it's an executive office, get a nice armoire or a filing system in your office that you can just take the files and set them in and lock them overnight. And the third thing is go down to your building manager and say, and ask them specifically, are the night security and cleaning crews bonded? Because to get bonded, they have to go through a background check. Are they bonded? And if they are bonded, can I see the documentation on that for my auditors? Those three simple steps, I think, would go a long way without disrupting everything you're doing. They would go a long way toward giving you a better sense of security about your own system.
Yeah, I think those are three great ones, Dave. And I would add just a couple to that, which is make sure your wireless network is secure and that your staff are at least bare minimum blocking their workstations at night.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with those. Now, you and I differ because you say make sure your wireless network is secure, and I would say, why the heck are you using a wireless network to begin with? But that's
Understood. Well, Randy, any closing thoughts for us today?
You know, I think your guys' list were just very much spot on. And as we think about security issues, I suspect this conversation will come up again, and we'll try to give you guidance either in the publication or on the podcast in terms of some of these security issues. I know we've got some plans for you in the coming year.
Yep. Well, fantastic. Guys, we're out of time today, so hope you have a great April. Looking forward to busy season being over in about 10 days. So, and then seminar season starts, right, Randy?
It does. And so we're looking forward to seeing many of you face-to-face around the country.
Yeah. Well, thank you, guys. And I also want to thank ADP for sponsoring our podcast today. Good day, guys.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.